take a walk, live life, but keep Radio Islam International at your side, on air, on social media, 24/7. Radio Islam International, DSTV Channel 826.
Well, UN Day is commemorated each day on the 24th of October, well, this coming weekend. Now, this is the day that the UN came into existence some 75 years ago, born out of the League of Nations, which many claim was defunct, especially, you know, with the advent of World War II in particular. And, you know, in 1945, the UN was born. Now, it was born into, after the Second World War, after the founding principles, or with the founding principles being to ensure that we do not see conflicts of this nature again by pursuing the course of multilateralism. Countries working together toward a common goal, and in this case, peace, security, human rights, and as of later, health and health-related issues. Joining us online is the resident coordinator of the UN in South Africa, or what we say the head of the UN in South Africa, Ms. Nardos Bekele Thomas. Good evening.
Good evening to you, and good evening to the listeners.
Ms. Bekele Thomas, tell us first, you know, educate us, what is the significance of this day, the 24th of October, UN Day?
Well, it's actually a day where, you know, solidarity among nations to eliminate poverty, inequality, promote peace, promote human rights. Is really, you know, is celebrated in a way, and where, you know, there is a call, a renewal for a redoubling of efforts for nations to work together to uproot all these ills of society.
You know, would you say that the UN has achieved its goals of conflict prevention? I mean, it's from 1945 till now, 75 years, Western Europe has remained relatively conflict-free. North America, Canada, you know, the US, relatively conflict-free within their zone, not elsewhere. China, for that matter. But everywhere else, I mean, Africa, from top to bottom, most countries, that is, Asia, would you say that the UN has achieved its goals?
The UN has achieved its goal, I should say, because we have not seen a World War III. And, you know, although, yes, you're right, there are conflicts, what we are trying to understand and resolve is the root causes of this conflict, which is inequality, which is poverty, and you know, among nations, within nations, and that's why we're trying to work hard so that, you know, the socio-economic and political rights of each citizen in the world is respected, and that there is no hopelessness, and which leads to really conflict. So, you know, we are trying now to address really the root causes of conflicts within countries. But we haven't seen, you know, a World War III like we did before. Although there has been competition, you know, trade wars here and there, but, you know, it's not of the same dimension as what we had seen earlier on, which was the reason for the creation of the United Nations.
Ms. Bekele Thomas, you know that when we say World War I or World War II, or even World War III for that matter, even World War II, it involved not the entire world. I mean, it didn't involve much of South America, although troops came there. Many African countries were not involved. When a nation is at war, they could care less whether it's World War I, World War whatever, but they themselves, at their particular stage in their history, they are suffering. I mean, if you now have to tell the Syrian people or the Palestinian people or the Kashmiri people that, you know, we have been successful in avoiding World War III, how would that make any difference to their lives personally? Where is the UN in resolving the conflicts of Palestine, of Syria, of Kashmir? These are conflicts, I'm talking about Palestine and Kashmir and other places as well, that are 60, 70 years of age. UN has passed resolution after resolution. One may say that the UN is merely some sort of a celebratory organization, but doesn't have the teeth to enforce anything. And if so, where is the enforcement in Palestine?
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, when we say the United Nations, we're not talking about international civil servants that are there to implement the resolutions of the UN. The United Nations are member states. And yes, we agree, and the Secretary General has been calling for a UN reform so that the peace and security, for example, should be sort of democratized so that, you know, other countries also participate and that it shouldn't be dominated by the powerful countries. And you're absolutely right. And this is where the UN is going after 75 years of its experience. It's come out of the, it has brought some solutions to the existing problems, but there are others that are emerging, and we need a compatible United Nations organization, multilateral organization, that is really compatible to the problems that are there and to be able to have solutions for the current problems.
You know, I'm going to take you back to 1945, ma'am. 1945, the UN started with 51 member states. The latest one, 2011, the 193rd member, South Sudan, joined the United Nations, bringing the total to 193. But if you look at the UN Security Council, which some may argue would be the most powerful member and arm of the United Nations, the ability to veto still remains with the founding nations. It remains with economic powerhouses. It remains, some may say, with the old powers of Western Europe and North America. Where is Africa's representation when it comes to the veto? Yes, ever so once in a while, you'll get a seat, the revolving seat on the Security Council, then you lose it after a couple of years, but you are always at the behest of the veto of those very same countries who will continue to push their agenda. We've seen that in many conflicts, especially the Palestinian conflicts, that the UN can pass how many resolutions they want to, but the power of veto has always been used by the United States to just ignore it, and the country knows very well, the state of Israel knows very well, that there's nothing that the rest of the world can do. When are we going to see an adequate and a just distribution of the Security Council duties with the power of veto coming to Africa and properly coming to the black nations of Asia as well?
Exactly. No, you said it, and that's what I meant to say. You know, the configuration of the United Nations that was compatible with the past problems is no more really valid now. It needs a reform, and we need to have a United Nations that is compatible with the formidable problems that we have today. And yes, the Security Council needs to be reformed, and it needs to be democratized, and it needs to have, you know, countries like Africa, countries in Africa, countries in Asia, to sit at the same table as the powerful countries so that there is a solution to the problems of this world. And that is where the Secretary General is lobbying and advocating for, and most of the African countries, including the president now, has been calling for a reform of the Security Council. We need solidarity of the world to make this a reality. We need to democratize these different councils because we are not as represented as the powerful countries. Therefore, you know, what you said is quite right, and that is where the UN at 75 has been advocating. And this has been the voices from all over the world. So many progressive people participated in the discussion and dialogue. They have asked for a reform of the United Nations. But multilateralism is more than needed today than ever. So, you know, it's the solution of being a nationalist is not the answer. We need to go for multilateralism, and we need to advocate and work for a reform of the United Nations.
This reform, ma'am, that you're speaking about, I mean, one thing is talking about it, one thing is writing about it. We've heard calls for the reform of the United Nations from the 70s and 80s already. Many presidents, Lubambo, you had Ahmadu Bello out there in Nigeria, writing about the need for the reform of the United Nations, stating things that even the wealth that is currently based in Western Europe is because of slave labor. The wealth that's out in the UK, it simply was because of their colonies, not because of they themselves. So even the power of those nations are a result of their colonial, powerage and their servitude or their attitude of servitude of other countries. Many people have spoken about it for decades, but what is the process? I mean, it's easy to say multilateralism, but what type of reforms can we expect in the UN if one had to take a calendar year of the next 5 years, ma'am?
Well, I guess, you know, the strength of the UN and the implementation of reform or the strength of the reform depends on the strength and the vision of all countries united and with shared vision. And therefore, I think, you know, it's up to us to make the UN we want. And therefore, we need to really be together solid, and you rightly said, you know, if we go back and see how colonialism was defeated, it's because, you know, states, governments, you know, nations rallied against it. And if we saw apartheid, you know, disappear, it's just because we again rallied, you know. But there are so many other new forms of colonialism, new forms of discriminatory practices and habits, and, you know, and to some extent also impunity by the great powers that we see. And we need to really defeat all these ills. And mind you, I think, you know, the struggle, there is no pause. It's a process. We will still continue because there will be emerging things, but we have to really make sure that our struggle continues and that we are doing it together.
With the pandemic and its impact, would you say that South Africa, let's talk about South Africa in particular and regarding the targets that South Africa needs to meet, would you say that South Africa can still meet the SDGs by 2030? How are you assisting the government to do so?
Well, you know, actually, the impact, the socioeconomic impact, as well as also the health impact of this pandemic was a result of the fact that we did not implement the SDGs as we should have. And not only SDGs, but earlier on the Millennium Development Goals, where we had advocated for universal health care, for, you know, basic services, for equality, for elimination of poverty. And therefore, we don't have any choice. We have to really come out with stronger affirmation and strong, imperatives that would redouble our efforts, that will make us work harder, understanding that the repercussions of not doing, of not implementing SDGs is higher. The government, in a way, all as bad as this pandemic is, it has shown us that we have to work hard. And there is, this is the positive aspect of it. And it has also, in a way, exposed the deficiencies in a very glaring way. And the government is trying to see on how to really seal all these deficiencies. And therefore, I think, you know, it's going to be a very difficult task because according to our socioeconomic impact study, if we do, you know, business as usual, then it will take us 5 years to be at the level of development as we were in 2019, which means that we have to really, really work hard and, you know, and in a way, when I say work hard, it's exponentially working hard. It's at a very increasing rate with full commitment and determination, and together as one, the whole society, everybody, every citizen of this country should be working towards that goal. And the government, from what we see, is ready. We are supporting the government in whatever capacity we have. You have seen WHO being there in the front and at the back with the government and trying to support. We have really put all our technical services in all fields. When it comes to education, the e-training, when it comes to health through the WHO and through UNFPA, we have not stopped giving the essential services because we do not want the country to go backward. We want to maintain the gains. And we are working on GBV, we are working on women economic empowerment, we are working with the youth, trying to expand the economy and making sure that the stakeholders in the economy are increased, and that increase comes from the youth. So, you know, we're working with you, the media, we're working with the civil society organizations, we're working with the private sector, we're working with the development partners. Therefore, you know, if we do it, the way we have galvanized all the support and the way we have working with that, the way we're working against this pandemic, if we continue understanding that, you know, even without the pandemic, we would be in crisis unless.
Ms. McKinney Thomas, if I could just come in over there, the World Health Organization, and of course that's a major arm of the United Nations, has issued various guidelines to governments. Now, some governments have chosen to abide by those guidelines. That may be South Africa to a great extent, which the World Health Organization in the past has complemented. But then you have governments and regimes that have openly flouted the guidelines and in fact have ridiculed the World Health Organization, and I'm referring to the current regime in the United States, like the regime of the government of Mr. Trump. From the beginning, where it comes to be it lockdowns, be it comes to any legislature, any guideline passed by the World Health Organization, you've seen certain governments of the world continue to flaunt them and to openly ridicule them. But the issue is that there seems to be very little that the UN can actually do, the World Health Organization can actually do, to ensure that whatever their guidelines are is actually implemented. So one may ask, and the world observes, that Africa seems to comply, or South Africa seems to comply, but the other countries, or other countries that are part of the strong arm of the UN that represent the veto power of the UN, well, they could care less about, you know, what the World Health Organization says. Has the UN put out any statement of lamenting, of you know, going against what those countries have even said?
Well, you know, like I said, you know, the UN is you and me. The UN are the member states. And all the more reason, when there is, you know, in a way, tides coming against us, we need to get you together and strengthen our muscles and try to defeat that tide. So, you know, I think, you know, yes, it's in the minority to start with. Most countries appreciate what WHO is doing. Most countries abide by the guidelines of WHO, because most countries participate in WHO. Most countries are members of the WHO. You know, the beauty of these organizations are there, you know, they are governed by member states. They don't exist in isolation. And therefore, all the member states that are members of this organization support and they bring all their scientists. It's a global scientific, you know, endeavor, and therefore, you know, there is global solidarity, and certainly there are very few and the minority that would go against these organizations, but it doesn't shake the organization at all.
Ms. Naldos Mikele Thomas, we want to thank you so much for your time this evening and for joining us on Radio Islam International. Have a great rest of your day, rest of your weekend, and thank you for your insight and your comments, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and happy United Nations Day.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.